All right, buddy. Let me see what I can do here with this. The Night Shift, starring Scott Sherman.
What's he like, our boss or what?
No, he's the supervisor. He's not here at night.
Nah, get out of town. Just you and me and the stiffs alone here? That's gonna be radical. That guy's dead.
Are you sure this is legal?
I don't know. It's fun though, isn't it?
Idea to eliminate garbage. Edible paper.
That's a remarkably idiotic thing that you just said.
In stupid sense. You know what I'm saying?
Huh? Tuna fish.
Hold it. Wait a minute. Take live tuna fish and feed them mayonnaise.
Oh, this is good. Call Starkist.
The Night Shift. The current affairs show for everyone.
We'll be fighting.
Starring Scott Sherman.
I'll tip my hat to the new Constitution. Take a bow for the new revolution. Smile and breathe at the change all around. Pick up my guitar and play. Just like yesterday. Then I'll get on my knees and pray. We don't get fooled again.
On the Night Shift. Here's your host, Scott Sherman.
Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome in. You made it. Hope you're not freezing completely wherever you are. My name is Scott Sherman. This is a show we call The Night Shift, the current affairs show for everyone, where we take the world around you and explain it in a way that we hope is entertaining and informative. And we believe tonight's show will be one of those both entertaining and informative shows that you will not want to turn away. That's why we do it here, 9 to midnight Central Time on the Big 550 KTRS in St. Louis, and streaming all over the place at KTRS.com. I say that because not only is it the 50th anniversary of the landing of the Beatles in America.
That was a big deal.
I wasn't even alive for that, Kyle. But we also, in studio, in hour one, and sitting here with us, and we'll introduce him here in a second, is a friend of mine and a guy who is a tremendous lawyer in the world of intellectual property. That is the stuff that we talk about here, copyright, trademark, patents, all of the things that get fought over by famous, rich, talented people, and of course, things that even you can be involved in. Morris Turek is with us. And Morris, we want to welcome you to the Night Shift.
Thanks for having me.
Not only is Morris a great lawyer, he's also the winner of the every Woody Harrelson look-alike contest you can ever have. There you go. Kyle, yes or no?
Yeah, I don't know. Is that okay, Morris? What's your...
Many people have told me that I look like Woody Harrelson, so
much smarter.
I believe Scott is right.
Much smarter than Woody Harrelson when it comes to intellectual property. And, of course, now that he's initiated, we'll be nice to him. No longer pledge Morris Turek. He is indeed Night Shift contributor Morris Turek. We'll have him on in hour number one just a little bit. Thanks for coming in, by the way.
Thank you.
All right. Kyle Bittner, he is the producer and engineer on this here program. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Scott.
Yeah, well... that's good to know. Olympics have started. They've already screwed them up.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, those sweater things that they're wearing and while they're walking in, I'm not sure who made those, but they're interesting.
Somebody's grandma was very busy knitting those ugly sweaters. I know they have flags and stars, but please, can we leave the ugly sweaters alone for the holiday season? That's all I have to say. Oh, and by the way, nice job, Russia. They only got 4 of the 5 rings to
Yeah, I saw a picture of that. They kind of screwed the pooch on that one.
Yeah, the social. Yeah, you don't get much for $55 billion these days. It doesn't go very far.
I just read something today that's more the $55 million they spent on this winter games is more than's been spent on all of the other winter games before this combined.
Well, you know, you would think that you'd be able to get all 5 of the rings to light up.
Well, you would hope for that kind of money.
But no, 50th anniversary of the Beatles' performance on the Ed Sullivan Show technically is on Sunday, the 9th of February. That happened in 1964. They landed at JFK today, February the 7th, 1964. And we'll talk about that and deal with the significance of that historic visit, the most important, and I think you could
clearly say, most influential rock band in the history of music, the Beatles. Now, a little Ed Sullivan. True, for those of you who never heard of this guy, he had a show where David Letterman hosts his show now, The Late Show with David Letterman, called the Ed Sullivan Theater. It'd be a nice coincidence that we have this theater named after you. You should come here and do the show. No, they had the guy first. Mm-hmm. So he did.
It was an every night show? I never realized. I thought it was like a weekend thing or something.
Well, it was on just about every night. And it was called Toast to the Town. I believe it was on radio first, but then it was on TV. But everybody knew it as the Ed Sullivan Show. And a little known fact, Kyle and Morris, in high school, I was fortunate enough to be in a vaudeville show that we all wrote ourselves. Probably violated every copyright you could possibly by just ripping off Monty Python and everybody else, but there was a piece that was done, an entire live musical piece that was done, and the Beatles, I guess it was some 20th anniversary, it was something that Kyle would be making fun of me for because it was so long ago, but indeed, the Ed Sullivan was portrayed by yours truly. Thank you very much.
How did you get into costume for Ed Sullivan? Did you?
They gave me a suit and they slicked back my hair and they said, "Go make a face and hunch your shoulders and go say right here on our show today, the Beatles."
Ooh!
Now it doesn't sound exactly as well as it did when I practiced that for over a month. Not for this.
In the mirror, just every day in
every
high school.
Every day, I wandered around and I would walk around my house and my mom would say, "There is something wrong with my boy." And there was. I was Ed Sullivan. Now, what we do have, ladies and gentlemen, is the actual real introduction. This is maybe the most famous introduction in the history of television. Here is Ed Sullivan, February 9th, 1964, the very first appearance. John Paul, George and Ringo, the Beatles.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
There you go. Ed Sullivan with that live read. Now, we do have the context of that, yes?
I believe so.
We will play that for you. Right now, here is how it sounded if you were sitting at home, pins and needles, waiting for this incredible band. By the way, Ed Sullivan had never heard of the Beatles before he was there in London at Heathrow Airport the year before. Beatles had just gotten back from Stockholm, Sweden. He said, "Who is that?" They said, "That's the Beatles. I need to get them on the show." And they made a deal with Brian Epstein, the manager. They ended up doing three shows, six songs. They were allowed to do two songs per show, but here is the very first live introduction and the first chords of the most important band in the world playing their most important gig of their career. Here are the Beatles on Ed Sullivan.
And now, here he is, Ed Sullivan.
Thank you very much. Now, yesterday and today, our theater's been jammed with newspapermen and hundreds of photographers from all over the nation, and these veterans agree with me that the city never has witnessed the excitement stirred by these youngsters from Liverpool who call themselves the Beatles. Now, tonight, you're going to twice be entertained by them, right now and again in the second half of our show. Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles! That's...
Close your eyes and I'll kiss you
Very good. All right. There you go. That's how it sounded 50 years ago. We'll be on Sunday. That's the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. And we are going to bring you some Beatles songs throughout the course of the evening. Mighty Max will be here in hour number three to talk football and get his head handed to him by Kyle for not only getting the Super Bowl right, but crushing everything, including the score and the participation of certain players, all of that.
I'm looking forward to – is that bad? Does that make me a bad person? I'm looking forward to rubbing a 13-year-old's nose
in
that.
I'm going
to
ask Morris Turek, our attorney, our intellectual property attorney. He makes fun of a 13-year-old football prognosticator. The kid's in the eighth grade. He dusted Kyle and myself throughout the season, and then Kyle, just out of bitterness and self-loathing, makes fun of the poor child because Kyle happened to get the Super Bowl right. Is that correct or incorrect by Kyle?
I think that's incorrect.
I agree. That is incorrect. That is wrong.
I feel that wasn't the whole scope of the situation. That's exactly how it was misrepresented.
See, now you have an unbiased person
that doesn't know the whole story.
Much more schooled in ethics and kindness than I. The great Morris Turek. He'll be around. You can find Morris at yourtrademarkattorney.com. When you hear this gentleman talk about these important issues, not only are you going to like him, you're going to want to pick up the phone and call him as well. Let's do this. Let's get out of here before Kyle throws something at me and knocks me unconscious. Morris, are you ready? We're going to take ourselves a break. Why don't we go out with a Beatles song? How about that?
Sounds good.
All right, here we go, Kyle. Yes. Why don't we do all this together? Why don't we come together? Audience. Morris. Kyle. Even Mighty Max. Of course, we'll have Steve Light. We'll also have Schwilly. We got a lot going on. It's time for a break. My name is Scott Sherman. This is The Night Shift. We'll take a break. We'll come right back. More Night Shift with Morris Turk right after this.
Yo, Vanilla, kick it one time, boy.
Yo, VIP, let's kick it.
Like it goes ding 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 ding. That's the way theirs goes. Ours goes ding 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 ding. That little bitty change, it's not the same.
It's absolutely the stupidest thing any musician has ever said in defense of an accusation of infringing on somebody's. It's not. It's theirs is ding 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 ding. Ours is ding 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 ding. All right, Vanilla Ice. I think he has sort of made a penance for his stupidity in later years as Rob Van Winkle. I like him, but that was very dopey. We'll get into the nuts and bolts of copyright violation, in particular some song usages in a little bit later with our guest, a very special guest, Morris Turek, yourtrademarkattorney.com, your trademark attorney. Welcome to the program, Morris Turek.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Buddy, I really appreciate it. Now, this idea of intellectual property has really become a hot button and a hot topic, but it encompasses so many interesting aspects of the law. This is your practice. This is what you do. I just dabble in it. So we're going to lean on you for expertise. Can you explain to the audience, what is intellectual property?
Sure. Well, I mean, intellectual property, it basically refers to four distinct categories of different types of property. So, for instance, you have trademarks, which are designations used to indicate the source of products and services or to sell products and services. So logos and names and slogans, things like that. Then you have copyright, which protects a wide variety of original works like movies and books and films and artwork and things of that nature. Then you have patents, which protects novel and non-obvious inventions for a limited time. And then you have trade secrets, which are, basically confidential and commercially valuable information. You know, some good examples would be the KFC chicken recipe.
I was just going to say the 11 herbs and spices.
The 11 herbs
and spices. And the Coca-Cola syrup.
Absolutely. Two very famous trade secrets, but also things like business methods and customer lists, cost information, things of that nature are all trade secrets.
All right. So there's so much of this, we could have this conversation for hours and hours, but we're going to focus our conversations primarily on the subjects in the fields, the aspects of it that you practice in: copyright, trademark. We'll talk a little bit about the right to publicity, which is part of that, and the trade secrets, the patent stuff, you know, the patent prosecutors and the stuff that moves. We're going to leave that for another day. We'll have you come back and talk about that another time. But in specifics, let's go through the two biggies that we're going to talk about. Copyright. And when you say a work of art or a work, what does that mean? Because that's really right in the Copyright Act. It's federal law. What does that mean, and how important is that to somebody that wants to protect that item from the rest of the world using it without their permission?
Yeah, well, you know, copyright protects, and this is what it says in the Copyright Act, copyright protects original works of authorship fixed in a tangible medium of expression.
That mean, I know exactly what that means.
All right, so we'll split it up. So original work of authorship, what does that mean? Well, it's basically a work that is not copied, but it doesn't have to be necessarily very creative. And there also has to be some intellectual labor put into it. That's a very low standard. I don't think I've ever seen a case where a court has said, no, there was just no intellectual labor whatsoever put into this work.
It has to be good. It doesn't have to be good. It just has to be original.
It does not have to be good. Exactly.
All right. So when somebody makes something or they write a song, even a dopey song like Ice Ice Baby, or they write a cool song like Under Pressure, if Freddie Mercury writes that and David Bowie ends up getting a copyright right to it, or you know, obviously, you know, we're talking about Lennon and McCartney, I mean, geniuses, or Salvador Dali, or any kind of sculpture, anything that somebody makes, what is it about that thing, once they've made it, that they say, oh, I want to protect this? What's the importance of that?
Well, under the copyright laws, at least in the United States, when you create something, you automatically have ownership of the copyright. So the author or creator of the work automatically has copyright ownership. The only question is that ownership, is that copyright enforceable against anybody else? So if somebody takes your book and publishes it and, you know, distributes it and starts making money off your book without your permission, what can you do about it? Well, without any federal copyright registration, you can't pursue any type of infringement action against somebody else. So even though you're the owner of the copyright, you can't use your rights without actually federally registering the copyright with the United States Copyright Office.
Okay, so we hear this a lot of times. They say if you write a screenplay or something, even if it's a piece of dreck, you write it, you should mail it to yourself. That just sounds like a lot of nonsense. What is it that the person that writes an original piece, even if it's a piece of garbage, they write the original piece, what's the difference between having the ownership in it and having the protectable copyright ownership in it?
Okay, well, what you said about mailing the work to yourself, so if you write a screenplay and you put it in an envelope and mail it to yourself and you don't ever open the envelope, we call that the Poe Man's copyright, and that is there's no protection for you whatsoever with the Poe Man's copyright.
That just sounds stupid. Stupidest thing anybody could make. Yeah. So if somebody writes and go, Eureka, I've written the new Jack Frost poem, you know, the two roads, and this is a brilliant poem. Everyone's going to want it. I want to protect it. What, Morris Turk, should this person do?
You would go to the Copyright Office's website. You would create an account. You would fill out all the information that the Copyright Office is requesting. You'd submit a copy of your poem. And about 6 to 12 months later, you'll have a copyright registration that you can use to enforce your copyright should anybody ever start selling your poem displaying your poem without your permission.
So when they make the original work, that's where they need to be. And this is the United States Patent and Trademark Office?
The United States Copyright Office is separate from the United States Patent and Trademark Office.
Is that part of the Library of Congress, or am I wrong?
Yes, the Copyright Office is part of the Library of Congress.
Okay, and we want to get you business here, obviously, but you know, if somebody has a poem, you know, they could probably do it themselves.
Actually, in many cases, that's true. It's not very difficult to fill out a copyright application online. It can be complicated when there's maybe more than one author of a poem or of a work, any type of work. There could be problems if you created the work as an employee of a company. That could complicate matters.
Interesting that you mentioned that, because we're going to talk about cases. You say that, and I think about the cases that recently have been decided out of New York in the federal district court about the Marvel Comics case and the DC Comics case, where the families of these artists that actually developed Spider-Man and the Fantastic Four, the ones that actually drew the stuff, were trying to get money from the movies, and the court said no. They were working for the company, and it's called a work for hire. Can you explain the importance to somebody that's creative but making it in their employment environment about the fact that they may or may not own something that they created.
Sure. So generally speaking, if you're just sitting in your house and you're writing or maybe you're creating a computer program or whatever it is that you're doing at home, you're going to be the owner of the copyright. You're not doing it for an employer. You're just doing it for yourself. And so you're automatically the owner of the copyright. Now, things change, though, when you are doing a piece of work for an employer. So if you are creating a work as an employee in the course of your employment, then that work is automatically owned by the employer, and it's called a work made for hire. That's one of the few times where the author or the creator is not the copyright owner.
That's right, and that's for stuff that is not a trademark. This is for a poem.
Could be for music, drawings, movies, videos, websites, magazines, anything like that. If you do it for your employer in the course of your employment, then your employer is going to own it and you have no rights.
Morse Turk is our guest. Your trademarkattorney.com, that's your website.
It is.
We want to take some calls from people in this hour because I'm sure a lot of people have really cool questions and you have the answers. Give us a buzz, 314-969-5877, 888-550-5877, and star KTRS. Morse, there's been so many disputes amongst very successful and very talented people in the entertainment world over who made this or didn't make that, who owns this and who doesn't own that. What we want to do is, before we get into that discussion, we'll set this up. The George Harrison case with the chiffons, the He's So Fine versus the My Sweet Lord case, about who owns the publishing rights to the lyrics of a song versus the music of a song. All of this stuff, Quentin Tarantino's new screenplay that's been leaked to Gawker, and the interplay between the protection of the work and the freedom of the press. All of that stuff are really cool issues. We'll delve into that, and a lot of people will be interested to know your involvement in the trademark world with the North Face South Butt, which is probably the most famous trademark case of the last 5 years, and it happened in St. Louis, and you were an attorney working on the South Butt case. So let's take ourselves a break. When we come back, more with Morris Turek, unless he runs out of here because I insulted him about the Woody Harrelson thing.
I'm not going anywhere.
He's not going anywhere, folks. Give us a buzz. We'll take your calls. More with Morris. I'm Scott, by the way. I'll be here too. More Night Shift after this.
This is The Night Shift, starring Scott Sherman.
Okay, there's one of the biggest songs of 2013. That's Robin Thicke, T.I. and Pharrell, Blurred Lines. You may know that from Miley Cyrus's tongue and her twerking. You may also know it because it goes by another name. We've played it on this show before, and we'll get to it in a little bit. That would be Marvin Gaye's Gotta Give It Up. Morris Turek is our guest, intellectual property lawyer, and you can reach Morris at 314-749-4059 as long as those numbers are correct. Is that correct, sir?
That is correct.
All right. Morris, you deal in these kinds of things, and you have clients that do. A lot of times, people have creative sort of license to borrow, sample, or use somebody else's copyrighted work. I think of Andy Warhol, who used the tomato soup cans, and then he made tomato soup can portraits. And you can do that stuff as long as you do not infringe upon the other person's copyright. So assuming that there is a protected work, whether it's a picture or a painting or a novel, what is it that the person then can subsequently do, and what is it to the point where they can subsequently be an infringer or get in trouble?
Well, it's a fine line. Oftentimes, there's definitely things that you clearly cannot do. So, you know, for instance, if somebody writes a book and you want to make a movie out of that book, you know, you need permission to do that. That's clear. If somebody writes a song and you want to publicly broadcast that song, you know, you need permission to do that. When the lines start to blur is maybe when you're using a very small part of a very large work. So maybe you're taking one page from a 500-page book and doing something with that. Or maybe there's a news broadcast that is maybe talking about a song, and they play the entire song rather than maybe a small snippet of the song. So these are very gray areas whether those kinds of uses would be considered what's called a fair use or whether it would be an infringement.
So a lot of it has to do with sort of the sensitivity of the owner and also the sort of magnitude of what the person that's claiming to be sampling uses off of the original work.
Well, I think that's true. But, I think also you have to look at, you know, what part of the work is being taken. If it's the part of the work that is most well known, for instance, the chorus of a very well known song, even though that might be a small part of the song, that's the part that everybody knows. Or maybe from a book, maybe you take the most well known passage from a book. It might be a very small part of the book, but it's the part that has all the commercial value, or a very large, you know, part of the commercial value. So that could be seen as infringement. So again, these are very gray areas.
And we'll get into parody and other things, First Amendment stuff that comics can do, things that Saturday Night Live and sketches can do, that news media can do in a second. But we got a call. Is this Daryl?
Yes.
Daryl is on line one. Daryl, you're on the night shift.
Hey, first off, credit to Morris. Did you see what he did there? He was defining things very clearly, and he said there's a blurred line. Very clever.
Well done, sir. He was doing a very – in fact, I was going to commend him on that. Good catch, sir.
Excellent work, Morris. Anyway.
Thank you.
A couple of things, actually, I want to talk about, if I may, if I can expand, and I'm sorry if I mess up your schedule. First off, the Vanilla Ice thing, you couldn't be more right. He came off as an idiot. You know, he not the brightest bulb, but Vanilla Ice won that case.
Well, he didn't. He did not, because he ended up paying and giving credit to Bowie and to Freddie Mercury, and he paid the royalties. So
I recall the payment going to Suge Knight. I don't recall the payment going to Queen and Bowie, but I can research that another time.
Well, it might have been while Suge Knight was hanging Vanilla Ice from the balcony.
Right. You know, that's a motivating factor.
That would definitely be. Okay, you got another one on Prince, I think.
Well, Prince is, as many of us who work in the legal community know, is very sue happy. Well, sue anyone on a drop of a dime, including his own fans. The question I have is, recently a couple of bands he was associated with in the past have recently reunited, one of them being The Time, and the
nice
other
day.
One another one being called The Family. However, you've not heard about them being reunited because Prince has threatened legal action if they use The Time in the name of their group, or if you use the name The Family in the name of their group. So they were forced to change their names. My question is does he really have, especially when it's a name that's that common, I mean, we use the word time and family quite a bit in everyday language, does he have legal basis to have such a heavy hand?
All right, great questions and comments. Thank you very much, Daryl, for the call. All right, that's kind of a trademark issue.
It is.
All right, and we're going to handle that in just a little bit. But as far as the music is concerned, the sampling can get out of hand and it can get silly. And also, it's difficult for the artist. How many notes are there on the scale of music? And they put them together in a way that sometimes it's different and sometimes it's not. I want to get your reaction to maybe the most famous copyright case in the history of intellectual property law and with music, and that's the George Harrison case. George Harrison's my favorite Beatle. I know everybody loves John. I love John Lennon. He's amazing. But George Harrison, my favorite Beatle, and yet in his solo career, he got into the longest lasting and most protracted bit of intellectual property dispute with the producers of the Chiffon song, He's So Fine. Let's do this, Kyle. We've got the clip from George Harrison's. Let's go to IP3. This is him talking about the lawsuit and sort of how difficult it is sometimes for even the judges to know what the blurred lines are, Morris.
I was requested to go and take my guitar, which was really terrible. I had to stand up in court with my guitar. So all these people grilling me and talk about how you write a song, which is really difficult because every song is slightly different anyway. But it did cause a bit of a problem because, especially like in America, the disc jockeys are all on top of it now, pulling every song apart. It's like spot the tune, you know, because so many songs are like so many other songs. Like we ended up with musicologists in court where we had about 25 songs, all with the same structure and the same notes.
I mean, isn't that one of the difficulties here, is that this is art and it sort of flows and you're trying to make science out of art?
Yeah, I think it is a problem. You know, the standard in copyright law when it comes to infringement is the work substantially similar? Is the allegedly infringing work substantially similar to the original work? And I think that's a very subjective standard, and I think reasonable minds can differ on that standard. I mean, what one person thinks is substantially similar, another person might not.
Interesting that you mentioned that. We played the Blurred Line song. You've heard that song before, yes?
Yes.
Okay, you referenced it in your comments. And now what we'll do is we're going to put you to the test, Judge. We're going to elevate you, Morris Turk, to Judge Turk. You're sitting in the federal court, which I'm sure you're already qualified to be a federal court judge. We're going to play for you a mashup here between the Robin Thicke song that you heard, Blurred Lines, and Gotta Give It Up by Marvin Gaye. Do you recall this song? 1978, Marvin Gaye's Gotta Give It Up. We're going to mash them together, and you listen and just sort of give me your thoughts on it. You don't have to give us a ruling, Your Honor.
Everybody get up.
The disco ball has dropped in the Big 550 studios. All right, Your Honor, Judge Turek, I'm not asking you to rule on this case, but do you think that there's a case going on right now brought by, I think interestingly, by the Robin Thicke people, by the one that made Blurred Lines, for a declaratory judgment, looking for a judge to say that it's not an infringement because this thing's selling all over the world. Nobody's tried to stop them, but do you think that the Marvin Gaye people, or the people that own the Got to Give It Up, do you think they might have a good argument that that's an infringement?
I certainly think the Robin Thicke song is at least reminiscent of the Marvin Gaye song.
Look there, Your sure. Honor, he's right there. I'm leading the witness. I think it's a ripoff. I mean, they're not as dopey as Vanilla Ice was back then, but I mean, that's not sampling. That's just taking and just putting different words to the same song.
To me, I think that's a good case of substantial similarity.
All right. Well, that's an important thing. And let's hear George Harrison, who this lasted 10 years. I mean, this case. And it really was a defining moment in his post-Beatles career. And it really screwed his head up because you're talking about one of the great artists and the greatest guitarists of all time, a guy who was spiritual, a guy that never intended to do anything wrong if he didn't. But here are his thoughts about the post-mortem on this case and some comments that the judge made to his lawyer, which I think are very interesting, IP4.
what happened, they blew up the what they call Motif A, which was da-da-da. They had that blown up about 6 feet square in court, and they were kept talking about these three notes, and the musicologist came on and played like about 15 to 20 songs, all with the same notes. Mm. But the judge also was funny, talking to my attorney just last week. He said, well, actually, I like the both of the songs. My attorney said, what are you talking about? You said it was the same song. And the judge said, oh, what I really mean is I like the same song with the two sets of lyrics. So it's, you know, it's something that I had to treat it, you know, positively or negatively. So I decided to do it this way.
Interesting, because even the judge maybe got confused about what is two unique works and what is an infringement of one work on another work.
Yeah, it certainly sounded like that.
And the judge's ruling in the case was that George Harrison unconsciously, how do you unconsciously do anything artistic? He unconsciously infringed, but he still had to turn over a lot of the royalties to the song, to the My Sweet Lord song, back to the Chiffons. I think he ended up buying the whole company just to make it right. All right, one quick note on copyright. We'll take a break, then we'll come back and do trademark or with Morris Turk. Fair use, or also sort of the First Amendment issue. When and how can people like teachers, the news media, Saturday Night Live, when can they use a work and not infringe?
Well, you know, under, again, this is a very gray area, but, you know, fair use basically looks at a number of different factors. I would say that the biggest factor that a court would look at if there was a fair use defense would be, you know, was the use of the work, did it have an effect on the owner of the work? So a commercial effect. Did it take away from the profits from the owner of the work? And I think they're also going to look at, you know, how much of the work was used. Again, was it a small paragraph of a huge book, or was it the entire book? You know, was it being used? Was it being used to make a point? Was it being used for commentary purposes, news reporting? Was it being used for scholarship or teaching purposes? All of those things a court would look at to make a decision as to whether there was fair use or not.
And then the most recent example, the Quentin Tarantino upcoming movie project. He writes a screenplay. It's called The Incredible Eight or whatever it's called. And then Gawker, that's an online sort of gossip, sort of news organization, they post the entirety of the script without Tarantino's permission. And now he has sued them to not only block them from keeping it, but also to get some money. Does Tarantino have an argument, or does Gawker have a First Amendment defense?
Yeah, I think that's a really tough case, but I think Gawker, by publishing the entire script, the entire screenplay on its website, I would say that goes beyond fair use, because that does damage Quentin Tarantino from a financial standpoint.
Morris Turek, yourtrademarkattorney.com. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll go into trademark, and you'll tell us about your involvement with the North Face South Butt case and about how people either can protect their rights to things that they use in for commercial purposes, or better be careful that they don't infringe on some big giant's right to protect theirs. More with Morris Turek. I'm Scott Sherman on The Night Shift, right after this.
You're on The Night Shift.
Idea why this song was considered an infringement of the Chiffons' He's So Fine. I'll never understand it, but the late, great George Harrison, 50th anniversary, he was in New York with John, Paul, and Ringo, and performed the 2 days later on the Ed Sullivan Show. Our guest, Morris Turek. Morris, everybody out there who runs a business or who is some sort of artist type needs your services to protect them, either from others infringing or before they step on a landmine. How do they get a hold of you?
Well, you can always look me up on my website, yourtrademarkattorney.com. My phone number is 314-749-4059. I have lots of social media sites. You can find me on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. Just search me on Google and you'll find me.
He's ubiquitous, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, definitely.
All right. Now, let's get into this stuff. We move from copyright, works of art or works, into trademark, which is, I won't screw it up, but tell us what it is before I screw it up.
All right. So a trademark is basically a name, a logo, a slogan, a character that's used to advertise and sell products and services.
All right. So if you're in some kind of a business, you have something that's unique that you want people to know you by, that is your trademark.
That's correct.
And you don't have to be a big company. You can be a little small fry working out of your garage. If it's unique and it's yours, you want to trademark it.
Well, every business already has a trademark, right? If you're doing business, you have a name that you're doing business under. That is your trademark.
All right, and so you don't want other people to leech off of you, your goodwill and your good name, and get confused and think they're buying from you and they're buying from some ripoff artist that's operating out of some sweatshop in Russia somewhere.
Right. So the best way to protect yourself is to even back up, the first thing you should always do is conduct a search to make sure that the name that you want to use or that you are using is not an infringement of somebody else's rights. And then once that search is complete and if the search results look good, then you can always go ahead and apply to federally register your trademark with the United States Patent and Trademark Office.
And you say a search. So you can do that. Missouri and Illinois and in various states, every state has a Secretary of State's office, which has a business services. Is that sort of the place to go to see if in your community somebody's operating the same name or similar name?
That's a place where you can go. When you go to an attorney to do a search, they will generally search the United States Patent and Trademark Office's records to see if anybody owns a pending application or an existing registration for a mark that is identical or very similar to the one that you want to use or that you are using. Another great way of searching is just going on Google, Bing, Yahoo, typing in your business name and seeing what comes up. There might be other people using your business name in other parts of the country. Maybe not where you're located, and so those may not be as problematic. But certainly, if somebody owns a federal registration for a mark for that's very similar to yours and very similar to the products and services that you sell, then that could be a major problem.
All right. So you got involved with a case where there was a federal mark, the North Face. That's a pretty well known place, and you represented and helped the South Butt, which is sort of a parody clothing line. Tell us a little bit about that.
Right. So the South Butt came to me actually after they had filed their own trademark application for the South Butt, and they had some minor issues with it. They came to me to help them, and I did. That application ended up being challenged or opposed by the North Face. The trademark application that was filed by the South Butt had a design element that looked, somewhat similar to the North Face, or at least that was the North Face's claim. And so after the North Face challenged the application, they also ended up filing a federal infringement lawsuit against the South Butt, and that's when the litigation ensued.
And it was resolved amicably. However, there is an issue of parity that even as long as there's no confusion between the two marks, you're okay to sort of do a version of it. Is that sort of the law?
Again, it's a gray area. Parity can be a defense to trademark infringement if it's truly being used as a parody. The question, and we'll never know the answer to this, was whether the South Butt's mark was actually a parody.
And there's been lots of examples of the Johnny Carson. Here's Johnny, somebody trying to make a toilet, and the Paris Hilton, the Hallmark case where they used her likeness. Every time something like this comes up, the stakes are very high, and you shouldn't do this stuff on your own. This is why you need to call Morse Turk, right?
That's right.
Give that number out again.
314-749-4059.
And your trademarkattorney.com, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. We really appreciate it. You're going to come back and we'll delve into this more. I mean, I can't believe how fast this
was. Yeah, really fast. It was really fun, though. Thanks for having me.
Anytime. Any suggestions out there for people that think that they might know more about this than they should? Be careful.
Well, I think my biggest tip to all creative people and business owners is don't take what isn't yours.
Don't take what isn't yours. Call your attorney, Morris Turek. He's sitting right here. Thanks a lot, buddy. We appreciate it.
You're
very
welcome.
Much. All right, there's hour one.